is W2TTT. Good evening, everyone. This is Gordon, W2TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call W2TTT. Alrighty. That's a good answer. Welcome. This is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. This is K2BAR, W2TTT is your control op. And tonight, we are going to have a conversation about amateur radio, telecommunications, electronics, electricity, computers, natural phenomena, to support all this stuff that we like to do, and above all, applications of all these technologies, how we operate, how we have fun, how we serve others, how we use our God-given gifts for the enjoyment of ourselves, those around us, and for those we serve. So, with that in mind, I'm looking for stations whose call signs begin with... Oh, I should probably explain one of those things. We also check into this net whether or not we have a question or a comment. And because we might ask you for a question, or we might ask you a question, or you a comment, we need to know you're there, otherwise we can't do that. So we please encourage you to check in, even if you don't have a question or a comment. So when you check in, you give your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, a comment, both, or none of the above. Again, don't be shy. When it comes around to your call sign block, we would hope that you would check in. So on that good note, let's see. Stations whose call signs begin with the letter Alpha. Please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and indicate whether you have a question, comment, both, or none of the above. Please call K2BAR W2TTT. Okay, nothing heard. Let's try, then, the Kilo station. Kilo 2s, actually. Kilo 2s.
K2BAR, this is KTZO. Let's see, I have one kind of question for discussion, and that's it. Back to that.
Okay, Jim, I got you, K2ZO. Very good with a question, I think you said. Who is the station who doubled with you?
K2AMI. Tony, no questions, no comments, just listening.
Good evening, Tony. Any other Kilo 2s? Right, how about other Kilos? Any Kilo?
KC2NKU, Marilyn, no questions, no comments. And before you ask, I'm coming along with my hip much better. Thank you.
Marilyn, we know your husband. We know you are hip. Okay, very good. Congratulations.
Aye.
Any other Kilos?
KC2DMA, Marco, what question?
Good evening, Marco. Got your question noted. Excellent. Any other Kilos? Alrighty, any other... All right, I said any other Kilos. All right, let's go to the November stations.
NS2K, Jim, no question at this point.
N2, Aaliyah, 5 questions.
Alrighty, I got at least 2 stations in that mix. NS2K, good evening, James. Nice to hear you back. I didn't get to see that last night. It's stupid. So it's good hearing you back. And Noel, it's good hearing you as well with 5 questions. It's like 5 golden rings. No worries about music there, folks. All right. Any other Novembers?
November 2, Charlie Gillow.
Okay, the November 2 Charlie again, please.
This is 10-2-CKD, if you can copy me. You have to move my antenna.
So that was fine. Very good. What is your name and do you have questions?
This is N2CKD. Yeah, Gordon, you and I had talked some time ago. I'm pretty sure I remember talking to you. I'm in Cortland Manor, Vector Net Control.
Okay, very good. And what is your name, sir?
Oh, sorry. My name is Lovji. L-O-V-J-I.
Okay, Okay, Love G, very good. Welcome aboard, N2CKV acknowledged. Any other Novembers? Okay, the whiskey stations, your turn.
W2JEK, Don, a comment and a question.
This is Whiskey 2 Juliet Charlie. Jim, none of the above. Over.
Okay, Jim, very good, and I got you as well as Don. Any others?
W2CH, Ray and White Plains, none of the above. Good evening to everybody.
All righty. Very good. I heard Marilyn in the back. Good evening, Ray. Any other whiskeys? Okay, any other call signs before we go to Echolink?
KO2, OK, Mobile.
Hey, Bennett, good evening to you, sir. Will you have questions or comments for the net?
Not at the moment. I'll be standing by.
Roger that, sir. All right. Any other stations? Okay, then let's check on the Echolink. Are there any stations on the Echolink? I am not on Echolink right now. Trying to maximize my battery charging here. Are there any stations on Echolink? Alrighty, well, let's do this. Let's get Don's comment away, and then we'll just go ripping through these. We'll do Don's comment, then his question, then we'll go to Jim, Marco, and Noel. I guess that's all right. We'll try it that way. So, with that in mind, Don, your comments are K2BAR, WPTDD.
Okay, K2BAR, and the net W2JEK. Good evening, everybody. Remind everybody that our next VE test session will be at the Barra Ham Fest, which will now be on June 2nd, Saturday, June 2nd. It was changed from the 26th, and we'll be at 8 o'clock in the morning. Comment. Anybody have any questions about that? Over.
Okay, I think we're good. It's good to know. One of my assistant scoutmasters and possibly one other member of his family are going to be taking a test that day, assuming there's no conflict. Alrighty, anybody? Actually, Don, why don't you give us your question then?
I remember a couple of years ago, one of the Kitnet project was a voice key based on a Radio Shack module, I believe, what they called a 9-volt recording module. I was wondering if anybody had any information about that, how to utilize that device. Back to net, W2JK.
I'm sorry, what device was that again?
On Radio Shack Online, they had called a 9-volt recording module, and it was a chip that was a digital chip that you could record a 20-second message. We're using this as a voice keyer. For some of the transmitters on the Field Day or VHF contest sites. I believe this was a project 5 or 6 years ago in the Kit Night, I think, one of the earlier Kit Nights back in that.
Ah, yes. You know, I built one out of the discrete chip, and then I found there was a company in, like, New Hampshire or something, and it was more than 5 or 6 years ago. It was something ridiculous, like maybe 15, 20 years ago, maybe more actually, I think about it, that had those. I still may have one of those keyers that I made. I made 4 identical keyers and connectorized them with a 4-pole, microphone connector, 4-pin, old like CB or ham radio microphone connector. And then what I did was I ran the other side to whatever, I would make cables from that to whatever the radio needed, and I used the accessory port for a TS-140, TS-680, or the 440, the 430, the 450, the 690, and any of those, and on and on and on. They all plugged in the same thing. So I actually drew my power from the radio on the fourth lead, and at the 8 volts or 9 volts there. And so they'll run on 8 volts. In fact, they'll run down about 6 volts, if I remember right. And I actually split mine up into two memories. I had a CQ button. A CQ button and a QRZ button is the way I set it up. The CQ was long and a short CQ, I think. But I don't remember what that chip was. But I could probably look it up at home. I probably have it somewhere buried in my junk box.
And to oil.
Go ahead, Noel.
K1KP, voice clear.
There you go. I think they were 30 seconds, weren't they? No.
Connected N2CKD. Connected K2ZC. Connected N2CKD.
All right, let me just take care of something. K2Z Charlie, are you on frequency W2TTT K2B Air?
Echo like
Okay, very good. Are you home, or are you just, you know, choosing to access or needing to access via vehicle like because you're away?
I'm home. I've been trying to get this echo link to work, and I've been having some problems. I didn't even realize this microphone would work with it. I'm going to get on the rig now. I'm going to shut this down, and I'll be with you in a couple of minutes.
N2CKD. Timeout.
Okay, so Lovejoy was there, too. All right, very good. Noel, you wanted to make a comment?
The chip is something like the ISD-1000, ISD-1020, radio shed part. And the expert is Jerry, N-O-2-T. Jerry says, we in northern New Jersey have built at least a dozen of these. The only difference from the schematic given by RadioCheck being a relay for push-to-talk. They work fine business, they remember the message from 1 year to the next without power. Just apply voltage and push-to-talk button, and comes to life with the CQ contest DENO2TBK. There are two versions. The better of these is a single chip. It is easier to configure and control. So NO2T is the expert on that.
Where did you get that text from?
Caesar just sent you the text, the link to try to explain it.
Sorry, we doubled. So where did you get that text that you were reading it from?
Send you the link by email right away.
Connected.
Okay. Very good. That's excellent. Maybe you want to forward that to Don as well. I think he'd like that.
Who am I?
Go ahead, Tony.
Still operating two of those chips as voice keyers for my Radio Shack downstairs. And Phil James and I developed a circuit that worked well with it. But Phil James has gone 10 years, and the paperwork has probably gone someplace too. I don't know, does Don have just the chip, or did he get the Radio Shack schematic that came with the chip, which with Phil James and I modified at that time. But I have two working units that work well. Still over 10 years old.
Yeah, I mean, if I still have mine, I probably last programmed them 20 years ago. And I know I had them a year or so ago. Some of them I've sold with radios. At one point I had four identical or nearly identical Kenwood radios, and as IF strips or as primary radios for VHF and UHF bands with transverters. Anyway, so that's good. Yeah, so the ISD-1000 or IS-1000, something like that. Yeah, that was the number.
Connected N2CKD.
Okay. Hi, N2CKD's back up on the echo link. Very good. Alrighty. Any more on this topic? Mr. Gunn, anything you want to add?
Yes, none. I guess the from what I'm reading in the thing on the online, I pulled up a Radio Shack, what I call a voice keyer, and they came up with the terminology 9-volt recording module, which has a loudspeaker, I guess a tiny microphone, and a battery connector or whatever. Model number 276-1323. And it's supposed to be good for 20 seconds. Now, maybe with Tony's, I don't know whether you can, I guess you can program it to read, like, say, just call, send out your call sign, or you could have maybe you need a second one to do the, say, call, good for calling CQ. I don't know, just Tony alluded to me was a modules there, maybe. But just to get me from Swim Whiskey to Juliet Echo Kilo for hours on end, I would, you know, be a... So I'm going to have to look up some of that information and follow it up. But that K1KP that Noel brought out, I'll have to pull that one up online and see what I can find out about it. Anyway, I thank everybody for helping me, and this is W2JEK back to net.
Yeah, I can give you one other thing that I did on mine, mine was based on some board that you could buy, but you bought the chip at Radio Shack, etc. As I said, I used the 4-pin old-fashioned microphone connectors, and not the big ones, the CB type or 70s-era ham radio, and one of the things that was nice was one was power, one was audio, one was ground. The fourth lead I actually used with a one-shot to essentially... not a one-shot. I basically had a buffered read relay across the long CQ button, and so that way I could control it from a bit port on a computer. So, you know, either a spare RS-232 port lead or a parallel port lead, I could use to trigger the voice keyer, and that made it simple. But you can subdivide that memory into different pieces if you want. It can be done. There was a way to do it, and I did it. So I had two messages in the same buffer, in the 20-second or 40-second or whatever, 30-second buffer, whatever it was. All right, anybody else? All right, Don. Back to you, and then we can go on to the next person unless you have something more.
Okay, I guess... I'll let you go on with the next question. Back to that. Thank you. Thanks all. W2JEK.
Comment?
Mr. Jim, go ahead.
If this is the chip that I think it is, it's in the same family as the one that... used in this... voice keyer, the MFJ that we all know and love. So if anybody needs some hints as to how to use it, you could look at the manual for the MFJ version.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad at all. Ah, dear. All right, Devils are up 1-0, Jeremy's up 7-4, life is good. Jeremy's got a couple of assists in the goal. Life is very good. Alrighty, that's a good point. And yes, it is the same chip, but these can be built for $30 or $40 at the most, and the MFJ, I think, cost $100 or so. Good gear, by the way. Yeah, it's the same family. The only difference is the MFJ, I think, had a 4-memory configuration, right?
Yeah, man, it's 2K. MFJ has multiple memory locations. They manage that using another little PIC processor that can tell the chip which segment to record or play back from. This one might actually be capable of doing that, but 20 seconds really isn't long enough to make that useful. Obviously, the MFJ one is the much bigger version of this chip. Anyway, back to that. NS2K.
7-3 on that one. That's good. That's good to know. We should probably do some microcontroller work with Arduino controllers and things like that, speaking of PICs. Alrighty, anybody else want to add anything on this voice care topic before we move on?
Another comment, then.
Go for it.
Let me get on the other machine here before I run out of juice. Anyway, NS2K. Let me kill this guy. Okay, he's dead. Okay. There's a new little, I'll say, microprocessor that's just hit the street, or is about to hit the street, called Raspberry Pi. It runs actually a small version of Linux, but it's got all kinds of audio and video in and out. Anyway, it's, you might call it overkill for this sort of thing, but it would... that would make somebody a really cute project, because it's got GPIs and GPOs and all kinds of things that would be directly applicable. So, and I think that's going to run around $35. There'll be a cheaper version of it for $25 at some point, but make a nice little platform. So at that point, it would all just be software and connectors and maybe some buffer transistors or something to make this useful for that sort of thing. Anyway, back to that, NS2K.
Yeah, do we know if it's a USB master or host, if you will, or is it only a slave device on the USB side?
The $35 version has a full Ethernet port, and it's also a USB host. It's intended that you be able to plug keyboards and mice and various things like that into it. I don't know if it has, I don't think it has a B type connector. I don't think you could use it as a slave, USB wise.
That's fine. So if you want to plug in a keyboard or something, you're going to have to add a connector to make that work.
No, the connector for the keyboard is already there. You might have to have a hub in order to plug more than one thing in, but it's perfectly capable of supporting keyboards, mice, and other, you know, things that would be connected that way.
Okay, so for everybody's benefit, there's a little bit of a back-channel conversation been going on here for months between... between you on the subject. So, tell you what, if you would like some online resources, what I will do is I don't think I have everybody's email address here. Anybody, well, I'll tell you what, we could do a real quick roll call. I'll do it. Send me an email at w2ttt@arrl.net or att.net, whatever you prefer. And what I'll do is I will create that a resource list, and I'll include Jim, obviously, and then he can add his information for those who might be interested in the Raspberry Pi. But you definitely want the $35 board as a starter point, because it just makes it a little easier and saner to work with. But it's got an H.264 video output, it's got a USB device input, as Jim's mentioned, some general purpose inputs and output lines, it's got an Ethernet port, I mean... You can do stuff with it, and it's got a good chunk of memory on it, too. It's hardly underpowered, so I think it's going to be kind of an interesting toy to play with. So on that note, I'll let you be with that. But if anyone's interested, just shoot me an email, and I'm actually online now. I can actually see mail coming in. If anyone wants to send something, we can talk about that later. But we have a rather full list. So, Jim, I'm going to push on because we could spend the next 2 hours talking about Raspberry Pi if we're not careful.
J4WD Mobile.
Rachel, I got you. Welcome aboard. Will you be adding questions or comments later on?
I have a comment, yes.
All right, let's just make sure we're buttoned up with what we're doing. I'll take your comment. So, Jim, did you have any more?
Go back to normal traffic.
Okey-dokey. Rachel, your comment, ma'am.
Well, there's a lot of digital answering machines that can be picked up for a buck or two at the consignment shop, or, you know, the red, white, blue kind of shop. I'm wondering if it makes sense that we might convert one of those for a audio keyer.
Well, you probably could, and for the price is right. But the only thing is that it's a lot of stuff to have to kind of clutter through. But, you know, I think as a technical challenge, it'd be fun. As an investigatory challenge, it'd be fun. It'd be a really good way, actually, for a young person to get their, to get a keyer without having to spend a lot of money. In fact, they probably get it for nothing. You know, get it for the soda they didn't buy that day, or the apple pie that they didn't buy at McDonald's that day. A dollar, you know. Your point's well taken. All righty, let's move on. Marco, your question, sir.
Gordon, I think you skipped Jim K2ZO. I think he had a question. This is KC2ZMA.
Thank you for... Mr. Zetto, I'm sorry, Jim, go ahead.
Okay, K2BAR, this is K2ZO. I've been discussing building something for use during, field day and contests and stuff like that. For the control of two headphones, and also to allow the speaker to be used. What I'm getting at is, let's say you walk over to somebody who's operating, and you've got an operator and you've got a logger, and they both have headphones on. I don't usually use headphones. I don't like them. But sometimes you do need them. Anyway, if you use the existing system, you only have one outlet for a headphone. And if you parallel them up, two people with different hearings and different impedances are going to have a problem. The idea is to come up with a little box that you could bring to a contest site. Let me let it drop. Okay, take the 8 ohms out of the back of the radio. Not use the high impedance from the front of the radio for the speaker. For the headphones, but just take the speaker lead, which was going over to the external speaker, if you have one. In most cases, you do, and build a little box, and take the output off there with a two potentiometers to drive the two different headphones, so the operators and the logger could set their own level. And also allow that audio, of course, to continue on out to the speaker so that when somebody comes up and is watching what's going on, they're not sitting there and not seeing anything. In other words, if somebody comes up and wants to see what's going on, they can hear the speaker. The operator and the logger have their headphones, but you're still feeding some audio to the speaker. And, of course, with that box, you could set that so you could drop the speaker level down or even turn it off. Question is, in looking at the way they do it, let's say Kenwood, they do is they come off the 8 ohms. And now what they do is when you insert the plug to the headphone, you switch off the speaker. I don't want to do that. And you substitute an 8 ohm resistor. And then coming off that junction are two 100 ohm resistors, which go to the two... left and right on the speakers. So the idea would be that if you do that with the two 100 ohm resistors, if somebody plugs in a mono speaker, you're not going to short the thing out. And I think that's why Kenwood does it that way. And then all I would do is then probably just add a pot. But I just wonder if somebody has any other ideas in thinking about it. I have seen something in QST which used the high impedance, low output headphone volume and then amplified it, and I think that's going to be a problem. I want to take the higher level speaker output and do that, which should be easier. My question is, what do you think of the idea of just a simple pot like that to do it? There should be plenty of drive without any real problems. Back to that, K2ZO.
I think that would work very well. So you want to use a similar system to what Kenwood does and come out, you know, with 100 ohms in series to the headphones and a, you know, and a, I guess, an 8 ohm to ground in case someone decides to put something nasty or decides to take, you know, turn off the head, the speaker, or I'm just going to, I'd probably use 16 ohms to ground, because you got all this other parallel stuff going on, and just in case someone sticks in like a 4 ohm speaker, I'd like to make sure there's at least 8 ohms out there, or something approximately 8 ohms out there to, you know, to make it happy. So if I had, let's say, I'd take like a 5 watt, 16 ohm, maybe even a 20 ohm resistor to ground, and off the hot end of that, I on each side, I would do that for each channel, and then for the hot, off of that, I would bring 100 ohms in series to at least the headphone outlets, and maybe the speaker as well. What do you think?
Mr. K.
Someone who knows a little bit about professional audio mixing.
Oh, come on. No, I did a similar thing here last year for Marathon. Was it last year? Year before. Year before. Oh, my goodness. That's scary. Year and a half ago. Well, we had some, what are they, the G300 Motorola mobile professional radios. But in that case, there was a 26-pin connector on the back that had you had to put a loopback plug on it in order for the internal speaker to work. So we took advantage of that and brought it up to a little plastic box that had a couple headphone jacks and a switch in series with the tip and ring on each of the headphone jacks. We put like a 16-ohm resistor. And they were all connected to the, directly to the driven out of the amplifier. And then we had a series switch from the driven output of the amplifier, that went to the loopback position on the, to the internal speaker. So the switch turned the internal speaker on and off. And then in parallel with that, we had, potential for two headsets and each plus and minus leg of the headset, both went to, or yeah, you know, left and right output of the to the headset went through a 16 ohm resistor. So if you shorted the thing, fine. If you ran it through a low impedance headset, don't care. High impedance headset, don't care. Anyway, primarily to keep from blowing the amplifier up and otherwise give you an output. Then for the volume on the headsets, hang on. Volume on the headsets, we just used an inline speaker or inline headset volume control, and there are two or three companies that sell those things, and they're probably like 100 ohm resistor or something like that across the source, and then you take to the output. So in the all the way on position, you get pretty much 100% of everything. And then what the linearity of it is depending very much on the impedance of the headset. But most headsets nowadays are, 30, 40 ohms, something like that. Anyway, back to that, NSDK.
Okay, so one question for you, Jim. The linearity of the pod, because the audio taper or linear taper, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be nice if it's linear taper, but you know, it's one of those things you just don't care. Even if it doesn't increase in some acoustically linear, which is really logarithmic or manner. In any case, you'll make it as loud as you want. And I don't know, probably 100 ohms. But putting the resistors in series with the tip and ring, so that even if somebody plugs in a single-sided headset that would short the ring to the sleeve, it's not going to kill anything.
Right, and by having two 16s, if they were, if they did that twice, you'd still have at least 8 ohms to ground.
Yeah, and the amplifier is not particularly particular about that sort of thing. None of the modern designs, at least. So it's pretty much a don't care as far as the load is concerned. You probably want to have some load on it, but and I didn't use particularly big resistors. Wattage-wise, in the expectation that the duty cycle is going to be extremely low anyway.
I get like 2 watt in one case and 5 watt in another, but I think I had 8 watt per channel or 12 watt per channel audio amplifier, so I wanted to make darn sure that I didn't cook anything. Okay. Interesting. Now, I also used a 100 ohms in series as opposed to the 16 you're saying. I kind of did mine based on the replication and extension of the Kenwood circuit. So I find that interesting as well, but okay. I like your ideas plenty. It'll be plenty of audio left over. I probably padded it down a little bit more than it needed to. All right, anybody else have any questions about this?
Yeah, I just have one other comment.
Jim, go.
Okay, well, the whole secret to making this thing work, as Jim pointed out, is the two series resistors, so you don't blow anything over to your stereo phones, just in case somebody plugs in a monophone. Yeah, what I intend to do in this box is put a regular, you know, the quarter-inch type non-shorting jack, and then, of course, I'll use the smaller one, too, in case somebody's got a smaller pair of headphones. And as far as the gain control, the individual ones for the two channels, I can just use a 100 ohm pot. And I don't know whether I'll find one with audio taper, but there's an old trick that what you do is you hang another resistor from the center tap over to one side. Okay, if you think about that, the parallel resistance across whatever that resistance is changing. You can change the linearity of the pot, and you're not going to get an audio taper out of it, but you'll get something that'll respond better than a linear pot. Little trick from many, many years ago. An old-timer showed me that, so there you go. But anyway, sounds good. I think I'll go ahead and start working on this thing, because it would be nice to have, especially on field day and for the contest. That's enough. That's it. Let's do something else. This is K2ZO.
Yeah, I think I want to put probably one on each of my GoKit radios, so I'll build that into the audio console of my GoKit radio. So I've been thinking about that process, too. So good. Alrighty. Thank you, Jim, for your comment. Marco, it is your ball. K2ZMA, KC2ZMA, W2TTT.
Okay, this is KC2ZMA. Okay, my turn now. Member Gordon, I was talking to you about power poles. My question is about power poles, the Anderson power pole connectors. The way I have my radio set up, but it's not to the power supplies, is not really neat as possible. And I like to get power poles, connectors, wires, and I'm also looking at the crimper you talk about, Gordon, power pole crimper. And the question is easy. I'll make it complicated. You know, there's connectors, the wires. I know they're very good. They're known throughout the amateur radio field. And just wondering, so many options and stuff like that. This website, them on powerworks.com, I think that's where they have them. And I was wondering what amperage wires or connectors I should actually get. I know probably definitely getting maybe the crimper wires. I'm wondering if anybody has, you know, experience or have these power pole connectors with wires and all that there. I'm thinking of getting it myself. Back to net control.
Alrighty, very good, Marco.
All right. Couple of things. Unless you're dealing with things of two things. Unless the wires are really, really big, like number 10 or something, you can probably get away with the 30 amp ones. The 45s take a little trick to use, and in either case, I would put a small dot of solder on the connector after you crimp it, you know, just for mechanical stability. Number one. Number two, almost never will you need the 15, and with a dot of solder, you will never need the 15. You can use a 30 and save yourself inventorying them. There are some that have come now bonded together red and black, which is nice in the shells, but, you know, you might find that to be annoying as much as helpful, so it's up to you. If you really want to keep together, keep a little tiny tube of crazy glue or buy them paired up like that, whatever works for you. But I like to be able to repair them quickly and not have to try to pry the thing out in real time if I have a pin that's stuck that's broken off or something. So that's why I try to avoid the duals, but that's just my own personal preference. But the duals have a lot of convenience, I will say that. And the last thing is, whatever you use for power poles, make sure somewhere on that lead there's something with a fuse or a circuit breaker on it. So a lot of the non-West Mountain Radio products are cheaper. They have these little modules that you can connect several radios and devices together. But unless absolutely every cable that comes off of that is fused, you're in for a problem. Okay, so I'm sorry about that. So, you want to make sure that every lead coming off one of those cubes does. You want to make sure every lead has fuses on it. Otherwise, bad things can happen. Okay, does anybody else have any comments for Marco on the subject of power poles?
And Mr. K.
Mr. Jim, go right ahead.
I don't know, bring your problem to Kit Knight. If you can get there, there are certainly people there with crimp tools. I just dug mine out and, you know, throw it in the back of the car. And I think Jim usually brings his tool and maybe some connectors, and I don't know. I'm not sure where my wire is. But there's also a bunch of wire around. Yeah, and it's a real good idea. On the original feeder where you come, it's a super good idea in a car to come straight off the battery, not some other point. But both the plus and minus leads must be fused at that point. I don't know that you have to fuse the minus lead anywhere else, but all the plus leads should be fused. And I really like the West Mountain product for something like that. NS2K. Try it again, Gordon.
Okay, does anybody else have any comments for Marco's question?
Comment?
Rachel, go right ahead now.
One of the things that you can use is a roll pin. The roll pin will hold the black and the red together, and then if you have to do some rework or one of the pieces breaks, you just push the roll pin out, and then you can replace that half of the connector.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Let me give you something that's rather amusing that someone told me. Someone gave me a plastic, instead of a metal roll pin, which has its own issues, because a lot of people have some serious issues about shorting issues with that. But to achieve that same result, the same effect, someone gave me a bunch of plastic toothpicks, of which the center, 80% were sufficiently stout enough so that you could just jam a piece of it in there, and they would hold the two together and keep them from slipping and not be conductive should something overheat and bad things happen. But I think the roll pin idea is good for readability. I get a little nervous about the metal roll pins. And I, by the way, I have some of those metal roll pins installed. So, you know, I'm not totally OZ about it, but I've read that there are people who've had bad things happen with them. But, you know, in some cases, I've used them anyway. Anybody else?
How about using a Q-tip? The center is white cardboard. Fits in there exactly. This is WB2GAI.
Okay, so that's a good point, too. And let me tell you another story about that. This about that, as they say, Ron. I was going to use a piece of rice, stout piece of rice, and just secure it with just a dot of silicone, which would have popped right out. And the problem there is that if moisture gets in it, it will become conductive, and a conductive thing between two conductors, you know, trying to insulate from each other, could, you know, add to a shorting potential. So that was why that was discounted. Although, you could, if you are patient and have some quick drying RTV, you could conceivably do something like that. But the Q-tip's a hair big, by the way.
How about a drop of crazy glue? Works fine.
Right, and that's good too, but to Rachel's point, it doesn't allow you to take it apart as easily. And then, you know, if you are in a field situation where, let's say, the wire lead breaks off, you might have some issues trying to get the old pin out to put it in the new shell, and so you may have to cut them both off and start again as opposed to just fixing one real quick. I mean, I keep in my portable, in my very light portable kit, a Leatherman, and with that Leatherman, I keep a bag of 30 amp power poles. So if push comes to shove, I can take my Leatherman and crimp one by hand. It isn't pretty. I wouldn't leave it forever, but it will do the job enough to get me through whatever field crisis I have. So, you want to try to minimize that kind of pain if you're in a field situation. But good point. All these are valid. There's no right answer. There's just maybe answers that have limited, or some limitations under certain circumstances. Mr. Ennis Ukego.
Okay, actually two comments. First off, one of the things that I've done sometimes is, instead of putting a roll pin or whatever in the individual connector, I've found, and I'm not sure if I still have a source, but very small tie wraps that run through both halves of the connector, you know, both wires, and run it through the two little holes, and it holds the connector together. You know, it's not so strong that you couldn't rip it apart if you decided you wanted to, or just cut it and pull it out. But it has, you know, serves double purpose, where it keeps the connector from accidentally unplugging, plus it keeps the two sides aligned with each other. Second comment is about soldering the connector. I don't think they recommend it, but, you know, I kind of like the idea. But I always solder it from the end and just put a small amount in, being very careful not to heat it so much and flow so much solder that it starts to wick up the wire. Once it wicks into the wire, it makes the wire very brittle and could cause premature failure. Anyway, back to that.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation, Jim. And, that's it. You explained it better than I did about touching the tip, but with just a dot of solder from the tip end and not the the tip of the shank, if you will, not the very, very contact tip. And then the idea of taking a very, very small, a very, very small tie wrap and putting it through two pair, if you will, to hold a cable connection together is a wise decision. very, very wise. What I'm amazed is how sturdy the power poles are in my vehicle. I mean, you know, it all bounces around all the time. I've got a Rig Runner, you know, 4012S mounted on the bulkhead of my console below my radios or behind my radios. And it's, you know, everything stays nice and sturdy plugged in. It really does. All right, anybody else have any comments for Marco? Marco, it's your ball.
This is KC2VMA. Yeah, thank you for everybody for the advice or anything. Like Jim mentioned that at Kid Night. Yeah, I know some of the guys have the power pole connectors and all of that. Maybe we should come by and check it out before I check some guys have to have those things and, before I go and buy them. Just one question, what thickness wire? Is it actually 16 gauge or 18 gauge? One or the other would be more the best thickness for a basic radio of 100 watts, because my HF only goes to 100 watts, and with my mobile here, although mobile VHF is 50 watts, so I think I wouldn't need a lot, or one would be better than the other, or which one?
Anything 50 watts and above, or even 30 watts and above, I use 12 gauge wire because I just don't want the voltage drop. So I use 12 gauge stranded, and I use 30 amp connectors. So, anybody else?
If you try hard, you can get number 10 wire in there, and of course you have even less loss. Yeah, anything lighter than 12, you'd only use for, you know, very, very minor devices, NSDK.
And really, really short cables, like, you know, under a foot or two in each direction. Because remember, your DC resistance is the, if you have a 2 foot length of zip cord, that's really 4 feet plus the connector losses. Okay, Marco. To Jim's point, though, I would say one other thing. If you're going to, unless you're really, really good, you're going to have trouble getting the last two strands of typical number 12 into a 30 amp connector. So you might want to go buy some 45 amp ones if you want. But for like the mobile rig you have, probably that 50 watt mobile rig, the wires that came with it are probably not number 12. They're probably number 14. So you can certainly, you know, put the 30 amp one on there just fine. You'll find that easy. And one thing I do is if the fuses are near the radio, then what I do is I actually remove a major chunk of the power cable and insert the extra piece of cable if I need to, using power poles. So that's pretty much what's going to happen. So if the Devils win tonight, by the way, they will be playing Philly. If they beat Philly, they'll be, and the Rangers beat, they're going to play Philly. I see. And the Rangers, beat their next opponent, which I believe is the Caps. The Devils will be playing the Rangers for the conference finals. Just thought I'd add that little sidebar in. Now back to ham radio. Go ahead, Marco.
All right, that clears it up pretty much. This gets just the basics. I thank everybody for their help and all that and the info. We can move on. Let's go. I'll bring it back to net control. This is KC2ZMA.
And it's 2K go?
Hopefully the last one here. The fuses, especially off a car battery, need to be near the battery, not near the radio. Because the chance of the short being somewhere, you know, feeding through the firewall or someplace like that, if there is ever a short, is far from insignificant. So the fuse should be close to the battery. Anyway, let me give it back here. NSTK.
Yeah, I come off the battery log with a very large sealed fuse thingy, and I actually only bring back the positive lead, but I should probably run a second one, but right now I'm using the chassis ground, and then maybe that's part of my problem with my other radio. We'll see. Alrighty. So, the horse, she is dead. Let's see. At this point, into OEL, five questions. Right, we've got trouble to get through the first hour, and we're just getting to yours at the end of the first hour. Go ahead.
Okay, well, some of these are easy. Okay, question number one. On a flex radio or any other radio system, when you're using a key switch, you need any type of ferrite when you come up to the and plug it into the back of the radio, for instance, in the flex radio, or even any of the older radios. Do you need to use a ferrite to prevent accidents happening? And also on the speakers, when you have a speaker come out of the radio, should you be using a ferrite there? And if yes, what kind?
That's a really good question. I've never used a ferrite on either a hand switch or a foot switch. I have several different metal foot switches, which I've used barefoot and never killed myself. So, but you bring up a good point. You get a little RF burns, the RF floating around, perhaps. But I have two of the Heil foot switches, and I have two others that are the opposite pivot. I don't know. As far as speaker goes, yeah, you might if you have RF in your speaker lead. Let's see. Should we go to the Oracle? We'll go to Oracle number one, K2ZO.
I use RG174, the thin coax, for speaker leads, and also the leads to the foot switch. Solves the problem.
I'm using a different kind of shielded wire, but yeah, I was thinking about it. I'm using that too, so bigger, but same idea. Okay, Mr. Noel?
So, just use shielded wire and the heck with the ferrite. Not cheaper. So I have a whole bunch of old crappy RG8X that actually has seen better days. Mr. Jackson has described it as a good dummy load, so I could use that for speakers and other switching.
Use RG174. It's much thinner. I'll give you some.
Yes, but I'm frugal, and I don't want to use the expensive stuff.
He wants to reuse the garbage he already collects in his house, like the rest of us.
It's like drinking the soda through a garden hose.
Well, no, actually, if you look at the Heil foot switches, they look about the size of RG8X for the cable that they use. It's not coax. It's some form of audio coax, but it's not RG8X.
Yeah, if anybody needs some 1855, I have bucket loads, or actually hampers full of that stuff they throw away every day.
Is that the 90-ohm stuff?
75, but it's a miniature 75.
The smaller 8X?
Yeah, about half the size.
That sounds good for speakers and for these various switches.
Not speakers. Well, you could use it for a speaker, but it's going to be lossy.
Next time you want to help lighten a hamper, you just fill up a shopping bag for me.
What color would you like, red or orange?
A little of both would be great.
Okay.
That way I can color code what I'm doing.
Hey, red for speakers, orange for switching?
Yeah, or left and right, or whatever, sure. Just right and sideways, very good. Noel, your next question, sir.
Okay, I have five antennas outside, and and I got four radios and a dummy load. And I was originally going to use two of these nice old B&W switches.